Welcome to the number one show and the source of truth for all things medtech. Here, we reveal the secrets and stories behind the investments, science, and commercialization of the medtech industry. Every week, we'll take you on a wild ride with the biggest names in the game, from entrepreneurs and investors who are shaking up the market to healthcare providers who are revolutionizing the way we think and practice medicine. So hold on tight and get ready for a journey like no other. This is the State of MedTech. Hey everybody, welcome back to the show, and I'm very happy and excited to have one of our first repeat guests back on, and that's Antoine Papiernik, who is the chairman and managing partner at Sofinnova. For those of you who are new, Sofinnova is Europe's largest and oldest venture capital firm with quite a bit of history. When venture capital actually became a thing many decades ago, there were three firms in the world. The iconic Kleiner Perkins, the iconic Sequoia, and the iconic Sofinnova Partners. So let me tell you a little bit about Antoine, for those of you who are new to him, and what we're going to cover in this episode. So Antoine Papiernik is the chairman and managing partner at Sofinnova Partners, where he joined in 1997. For him, life science investing is not just about recognizing good science, as he puts it, but it's about people. Learning how to interact with co-investors, related partners, entrepreneurs, listening, discerning, and negotiating, and finding common interests. And this is one of the reasons why I genuinely enjoy talking to Antoine. I'm very fortunate to have developed a friendship with him. And that's because he's one of the few venture capitalists I talk to who has this thought. A lot of, you know, VCs, they talk about this idea of people and everything, but when you look at their actions, they don't really map to their words. Antoine very much is a man of his word, and I'm definitely a man with vision, and so that's why I wanted to have him back on the show. And so in this episode, what we end up covering is sort of a review of 2022 and his outlook on 2023. This is ahead of the JP Morgan conference, and he kind of makes a few predictions for the year along with a few interesting announcements from Sofinnova. Now, Antoine truly is a gentleman's VC, and what I mean by that is, you know, he lets his results do the talking. I think many of you who follow venture capitalists these days, they're, for the most part, doing self-congratulatory backpats on Twitter. I mean, he's definitely not one of those people. So that being said, though, I do want to highlight a few of his accolades and some of his track record. He's been an active board member and an initial investor in a number of public companies. And let me give you the list because it's quite impressive. Actelion, ProQR, Shockwave Medical, Novus Pharma, which sold to CTI, Movitus, which sold to Shire, and Pixium Vision. Trade sales success stories are things which we know many of these companies, such as CoreValve, which sold to Medtronic, Fovea, which sold to Sanofi Aventis, Ethical Oncology Science, which was EOS, that sold to Clovis Oncology, and Recor Medical, which sold to Otsuka. And he's also invested in and the board member of a variety of private companies, such as Reflexion, Tissium, Picardia, Safehuel, Noma Therapeutics, Mayhealth, HighLife, and many others. He holds an MBA from Wharton School of Business at Penn and has been selected twice for the Forbes Midas list, which is essentially an annual ranking recognizing the world's top venture capital investors. He's one of the few European and life science investors to actually appear on this prestigious list. So again, accolades aside and the track record aside, he's somebody who really has vision, and he's the type of investor that I hope other younger and newer investors look to essentially pick up what I like to call the good habits and philosophies when it comes to venture capital investing. So with that being said, here is our episode on a 2022 review and a 2023 outlook with Antoine Papiernik. Enjoy.
Hey everybody, welcome back to the show and happy new year, happy 2023. And of course, we're about a week out from JP Morgan Healthcare and of course, my favorite conference in the investor world, the LSI Summit in Dana Point. And so to kick that off, we had to have our good friend and special guest, Antoine Papiernik, who is the chairman of Sofinnova Partners, back on to kind of do a quick review of 2022, talk about 2023 outlook. And of course, we have some fantastic questions from the audience for Antoine and a special announcement for the audiences. Some interesting news out in the Sophie Novus who want to talk more about them. For those of you who are clinicians, because this is such a fantastic episode, you're going to learn quite a lot. We're going to make this a continuing medical education episode. So if you want to claim your credit, check the link below and click the link. Go and do a quick reflection, write down what you learned from Antoine, and then you can claim your AMA PRA Category 1 CME credit. So with that being said, Antoine, hello, bonjour, welcome, and Happy New Year. How are you doing?
Well, first of all, thank you, Omar, and Happy New Year to you, to your beautiful son.
Yes, that, thank you.
I've had the occasions to meet over the air. So great to be back on the show. Thank you for inviting me.
Absolutely. My pleasure. So let's just drive right into it. So it's going to be a lot of topics we're going to cover in a short time. Real quick, just, you know, a lot of things happened in 2022 in the med tech world. You know, 2021 was kind of a weird year. We were just coming out of COVID. There was still a lot of hesitancy in the market. I feel like 2022, we actually got back to normal. What were some big things that you saw in 2022 in terms of the med tech landscape?
A lot happened for sure.
You know, a lot happened.
Back to normal, I would say. That's a sentence that I'm not sure I would use, because nothing's normal by many means. Right now, nothing seems absolutely normal. And then people get back to, okay, we have a job to do. So they do their job, but really it's not a normal environment. It's more normal for MedTech because, yes, hospitals were open for business, but the rest, my God, I mean, what a year. We thought COVID was bad, but this was special. There were some amazing moments in MedTech. I mean, of course, the acquisition of Abiomed by J&J. I mean, yeah.
What did you think about that, by the way?
Well, thumbs up. I mean, what can I say? You know, when I see a big corporate buying a pretty big corporate, I'm happy. You know, I'm happy because it means, you know, you need oil in the cogs. That's a big cog and not a lot of oil. So that always is important to drive the others, you know. So you get one of these big whale happening, and then hopefully people are saying, yes, there are people actually that want to, that understand what growth is about, that want to develop a new category, that want to have something that they don't have in their portfolio. So, but look, I'm a total optimist. So when I see this, I'm happy, and I congratulate J&J. By the way, I just came to my mind, but one of our portfolio company from an MD startup accelerator called Precardia was bought by Abiomed, and now
congratulations!
That's way before, but now that product is in the hands of J&J. I'm happy. So I'm happy because that product might actually save patients' life at a scale that is even greater than what Abiomed was ready to do by itself. So yeah, there's so many positives about something like this happening.
That's fantastic. That's fantastic. So what are the things in 2022 kind of stood out to you? You know, the Abiomed acquisition was very big. There are some other mergers and acquisitions that happened in the year, like, you know, but I would say, I hate to say it, more underwhelming ones, you know, no offense to them, but, you know, so Orthofix and C-Spine merged, you know, congratulations to them. Wasn't something that really got me up out of the morning and be like, man, what an exciting news. What are some other things in 2022 that you felt was really interesting and sort of telling about what we're going to expect in 2023 in the venture landscape?
Well, I think maybe I probably already said this in your show, but a big difference between medtech and biotech is the universe of buyers and the fact that there's a relatively small number of buyers in medtech. By the way, Abiomed being bought by J&J doesn't help because you get one less. But and that's the thing that is an issue with medtech, which led me to think and to say probably again on your show that you need to think about how you build the business and think your business as if you're going to be the next Abiomed, because it's doable. Abiomed did it. Shockwave did it. There are a number of people who actually managed to do that. So the thing that I think tells us about the future, which is very interesting, I'm not sure what it tells us about the future, but it does tell something, is that you see a number of corporates reorganizing. And a lot of the big corporates have very low top growth, and they even though they are not, as you said, beside Abiomed, they are not taking their checkbook and really buying those companies that could potentially be the next Abiomed for them. They're thinking, how do we change? How do we adapt to the future? One of the traits, for instance, I mean, you saw Medtronic announcing that they would spin off large part of their assets or a number of assets that they deem non-critical to their growth. That's very interesting. I, again, being an optimist, I look at this and I'm thinking, okay, they're making space. They're going to spin that off, get this into independent companies or sell this to private equity or whoever. And it's going to make more space for them to be able to have the resource, the cash, basically, to spend on things that are the next generation growth drivers for their business. And I think that's an important trend. And I see Medtronic, I think not everyone is doing it, but I think Medtronic, I think is one of the first companies really trying to do that. I think that's a positive trend for the small startup world, because hopefully when this is done, more flexibility. These big groups will have more flexibility, more cash, and can concentrate on what is going to be the next big thing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, it's interesting you say that, because like one thing we noticed in 2022 is, you know, a lot of strategics essentially holding off, you know, and reserving their cash reserves. Do you feel like there's going to be more investment activity this year than compared to last year? And if so, why?
So I like making the parallel with biotech, because as a firm, you know, we do a lot of biotech as well, and I can see exactly what's going on the other side.
And that's
side.
Good for this audience, because I'll tell you that the majority of this audience is mainly med tech, med device, but there's starting to be a merge of biotech. And so I've gotten more requests about biotech. So if you could do that, I know the audience would really appreciate that.
So, I mean, back to what I was saying about the universe of buyers, you know, there are hundreds of companies in the biotech sphere that are potential buyers that are above 10 billion in market cap and have the ability, the will to buy. So I think that's very different in biotech. Because of the sheer number of those companies, but also by the mantra of these people. Maybe they are faced with other things, the patent cliff, you've heard about that. That's not so much of an issue in the medtech world. It is, but not
can you
so
define
much.
That? Can you define that a little bit for our audience? You patent said patent cliff,
basically,
right?
Patent cliff is, it's very simple. It's the fact that a patent lasts a definite amount of time. And after that patent, things just go off the cliff. It's an image, but it's a pretty powerful one. It's more important in the biotech world because then if you have a small molecule pharmaceutical and your patent is off its timeline, then you're going to have generic competition. This is not so much the case in on the medtech side. But take this. Today, analysts just have accounted that there would be $250 billion of loss of revenue from the big pharma because of this patent cliff. They've got so many products like coming off patent that by 2030, which is tomorrow really, they're going to lose a quarter of a trillion of revenues because of that. So that explains why it's not just about the number of those guys, but like these guys are on a clock. They need to find those products. In the medtech world, you know, to be nice, I would say corporates are taking their time and they are doing things. They are restructuring, as I mentioned, making sure they put assets that they want to park on the side, but they are taking their time because they can. So that's a very different dynamic. This being said, which led me to say, you know, if you think that you're going to take your company maybe CE mark and a few patients in the US and sell it for a few hundred million, that does not happen anymore. It will, but that's not the strategy of these guys. If you are able to sustain your operations to build a business, then you're going to have a lot of buyers. Just, you know, you can actually do Abiomed. If you have the product, there's nothing outside of cash, which is a small, you know, important thing. If you have the talents and the cash, you can actually build a business with a great product. So, and that's certainly what I would recommend to anybody that thinks they have a great product. So that's those are the dynamic. Yeah. So the medtech guys are taking their time. They won't, you know, take their checkbook too fast, and they'll think very 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 carefully about what they buy. Again, because they can. It's not that there's huge competition. The time of FOMO. Oh my God, I need to buy one of these because otherwise, you know, if someone else buys it, I'm not sure. I hate recognizing it because FOMO is fantastic for us investors and entrepreneurs, but I don't think that you can, you know, bet on it. You cannot bet on it for sure.
Well, funny you should mention that. Let me ask you a related question. Something I noticed, at least on my end, with some of the companies that I work with and just in the market in general, that you're the one who knows this 10 times better than me. So you correct me if I'm wrong. I feel that with the investment landscape, investors are getting more conditioned to what they're seeing in the software world. Very, very high return on investment in a very short amount of time, right? And so they're getting conditioned to that. And they're taking those same expectations and bringing them into medtech. And the reason why I mentioned this is that it costs money to take a medical device to market. And there's this gap between when a medical device or medtech company is, let's say, pre-revenue and when they're commercial, that nobody wants to touch them. And now I've talked to a lot of companies where they have phenomenal technology, you know, technology that I know for a fact will actually make a big impact on patient care. But what they're hearing from investors is, hey, we love this technology. We love the science behind it. But come talk to us when you're doing, you know, 10, 15, 20 million in revenue. You know, and as a result, a lot of them have had to go into, let's say, equity crowdfunding, which I think is a good avenue. But I'm wondering, is that just me? What are your thoughts about that?
Hey everyone, I want to take a quick commercial break to tell you about a fantastic partner of ours and how they're helping medtech investors and founders. So when you think about the world of medtech and healthcare, one of the most important things is finding a way to de-risk the decisions that we make, which essentially will determine whether we get to save lives with the life-saving innovations we develop. And that starts with having the right market intelligence and data. So MedTech Pro by LSI helps you identify MedTech market insights and opportunities faster than anything before. And I can speak specifically to this because I'm actually a user of the platform. Their software platform, research, and advisory services have been trusted for over 15 years by major corporations from Medtronic to McKinsey & Company. And with MedTech Pro, you can choose from a suite of integrated and customizable products that essentially help you accelerate growth at all stages of your business. You can get the deepest data on MedTech's hottest startups, which is one of the reasons why I love using it, analyze major surgical procedure volumes, and get five-year forecasts across 37 countries and stay ahead of the curve with a comprehensive library of market reports. At the end of the day, in this day and age, the team, the investors, the companies that win are the ones who have the best data faster and sooner than anybody else. And so MedTech Pro helps you with that. So if you're interested to get a demo and check out the platform, which I highly recommend you do, go to getmedtechpro.com to learn more and request a demo today. Now, let's get back to the episode.
I'm wondering, is that just me? What are your thoughts about that?
Well, that's an easy answer from an investor that is not willing to take the risk in general. You know, I'm not saying that's bad, but that's what it is. I think what you described about these people that are conditioned to the software side that is much more, you know, higher velocity. I think this is so 2021. I'm sorry. I'm not sure that that's the case even in software. So, you know, people have gone back, I mean, to, hey, no. Maybe you need to take it slightly slower because you cannot do this thing. Okay, if you're pumped up with cash, but no one's pumped up with cash. Or if they are, they're going to start saving or making sure that they can cross the chasm to the other side. And the other side is going to take some time. So I think it doesn't make it easier for the entrepreneurs because there's a moment here that, okay, how do I fund this company? I've got a great product. I've got, you know, just very early revenues. Well, I'm about to get approved by the FDA. So you're right. It's crossing the desert in a lot of these people. And although I've already said twice that I'm an optimist here, I'm a realist. It's going to take some time. So,
yeah.
You need to weather the storm. If you think you've got something fantastic, you need to weather the storm. That's the storm is here. if you don't think so, I'm going to the JP Morgan conference. I was looking at the weather. I mean, come on, is this,
I'm going to be there next week. Yeah, I'm going to be there next week too. I hope the rain lowers, comes down a bit.
Well, I'm going to be there if I'm able to fly there and if I'm able to land there without anything wrong happening, because looking at it, it looks pretty bad. So, signs are important. You look at this sign, JP Morgan, 2023, the biggest gust of wind and rain in 20 years. Yeah, it's a sign. You could look at it.
I never thought about that. That's actually a good point.
I just thought about it, but it's pretty clear. It's like if you wanted to know what the spirit is going to be like, it's going to be a wet and stormy JPM. And for having done it a few times, you can't have an umbrella. So you need to weather the storm. It is what it is. So you need to make sure you're ready for it and have several pairs of shoes because they're going to be wet.
I'm usually good at picking that kind of stuff up, but that's such a great analogy. I'm gonna be using that. But I think it's a very good one. On that note, what were some of the big wins, and momentum that came out of Sophie Nova from 2022, and what's kind of new for you guys in 2023? I know you guys have some interesting news. I saw the news today that a very well known name had rejoined you guys. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, first of all, everyone was at work, I have to say. So just the statistics is that we did 10 across the firm, 10 new investments in 2023. So for those who say that investors have just stopped investing, 10 new investments across the platform, but 23 refinancing. That's the number.
Oh, that's wonderful.
23 refinancing. It means that, hey, crossing the chasm, making sure you're ready for the storm. You need to refinance your companies because
absolutely.
If you don't put your money where your mouth is, who else is going to do it? So making sure that your companies are as funded as you possibly can across the board, and any biotech, medtech, industrial biotech, you need to just cover the field. So that's the first thing. And our companies raised over $1 billion, I think 1.25 billion over that period. So collectively, we put, I think, a quarter of a billion in our companies. They managed to find other money from outside. So 2022 was really busy doing that.
That's great.
Hopefully preparing, because we saw it coming, not too far in front of us, but we saw it coming. So we got prepared and got our companies to be sturdier. So that's one thing. As a firm, and I cannot recall if we discussed this on the show, but we also, it's also a pretty big trend, not for our portfolio companies, but for the firms, the asset managing firms like ours that are preparing for the future, is we brought in a very large and powerful partner into Sophie Nova called Apollo. We basically brought them, they took a minority position in our firm. And in hindsight, wow, that was really good because...
And who is, for the audience, who is Apollo and what do they do?
Apollo Management is one of the largest asset management platform on the planet. They have over half a trillion under management, 500 billion. And they are investors across the landscape, not in life sciences and they are in healthcare. They've invested maybe 5 billion in healthcare last year, but in much more mature companies. But they are very interested in what we do because
that's fantastic.
Not in this field. And I think it's a very good news. It's not the sole news. There's other things like this. EQT was bought by, sorry, not even, sorry, the other way. Life Science Partners were bought by EQT last year. You saw Abingworth being bought by Carlyle. So this is a trend. This is a trend. And so those are different deals than ours. Ours was a different deal in the sense that we sold the minority position of our firm, and we that was really to build the business for the next 10 years. But it's the same trend that is behind that, which is how do you build? It's a bit like when we talked about in the portfolio companies, how do you build, how do you make sure you get your investors that are going to be there to support you over the next chapters, because there's going to be several things that you need to do going forward. So that is something big that happened to us in April, May, and that gives us, I think, a really good setup to think about the future. And when you are in the middle of a storm, the idea that you can actually see the Northern Star, that you can actually, there's a place that you can, you know, you're secure. You maybe, you know, you are able to, you think that you're able to weather that storm. I think it's very important. So, you know, applying to our companies, the same thing that we are applying to us, it's not so different. You know, so we are facing the same environment. You know, we're talking about investors in portfolio companies. It's the same with investors in funds. These guys, I mean, have all the reasons in the world to say, hey, oh, hold on, guys. I'm, you know, putting my pen down for a while. Let's see what happens, you know, after the storm. So having strong partners, strong investors, that's true for our portfolio companies. It's true for the investment world and the people like us. So that's what we found in Apollo. So we continued to work. We brought in some ammunition, strong, you know, partners in our firm, and we continue to hire as well. You know, latest count, we're 64 at the firm, which, you know, we tripled in size in the last 6-7 years. So that's not easy to do. And yes, today, in fact, we've announced a news, which is that Manu Iyer rejoined Sophie Nova as a venture partner. And I love this story because, first of all, Manu is an amazing guy. He came to Sophie Nova. He was in our team. I can't remember. I think it's 10 years ago. I should have read the press release, I guess. I did read it, but I forgot. And he joined and was essential in building Recor. I think we spoke about Recor. In fact, we bought the assets of a company that had developed a device but could not bring it to fruition. And that was the base on which we did this. And Manu was working at Sophie Nova. He was, in fact, working half of his time at Sophie Nova, half of his time at CoreValve at the time. That's pre-selling CoreValve to Medtronic. So you can see that's a long time ago. Well, it's more than 10 years because we sold it in 2009. So that's a good sort of time check. So yeah, it's over 13 years ago. My God, time flies when you're having fun. So we already were having fun with Manu, and Manu stayed on, of course, in Recor, built Recor. We brought in, with his help, Andy Weiss, who became the CEO, replaced him as the CEO, but he became the operating officer. Yeah. So both the work that Andy and Manu have done at Recor, it's just amazing. Yeah, you know, Recor, as you know, is one of the only company, I say one of the only to be nice, that brought some amazing positive data in the treatment of hypertension using renal denervation. I remind you that this was a swear words for a number of years after the Ardian trial failed. And today, I think we have the ability, the data, to see that this could become a big vertical for MedTech, a massive vertical, because hypertension is one of the biggest indication there is. So, yeah, I love this because Manu and Andy, if you come to Sophie Nova, Omar, you will see we have these pictures of our entrepreneurs that are successful entrepreneurs that made basically our success in our corridor. It's on the wall next to our kitchen. And Manu and Andy are on the wall. So the idea
it's really came full circle, actually. Yeah. I love that. I love, you know, this is what kind of, you know, keeps me in this industry is stories like that and that history, which is fantastic. And I'm really excited for Sophie, you know, especially with this partnership with Apollo, because, you know, I think, you know, if you look at the biggest companies on planet Earth, Google, Amazon, et cetera, you know, they're tasked to constantly grow. And Amazon can't say, hey, we're going to go into the furniture business. Like, they have to look at really big bets, and healthcare is one of them. All these tech companies, they kind of, in my opinion, they failed the last few years because they came in with a tech business model. And it was very inspiring for me to see that Amazon, you know, they I think they had Amazon Care, didn't work, but then they acquired One Medical and they're trying at it again. And so when I hear that Sofinnova partners with somebody like as large as Apollo, right? Again, biggest platform on planet Earth, it shows that it's giving one other avenue to get exposure to the great science and technology and medtech to investors. Because again, I haven't written a $1 billion check for anybody, but I would imagine that investors, when they look at their portfolio, is a good, it just feel good to get a good return on a software company. Yeah, sure. But it probably feels a lot better when you say, hey, we had a great return from this medtech company and look at the impact we had socially on all these patients and how, what it's doing in the world.
But yeah, I think this is also why a giant like Apollo is interested in the space, is because, you know, we provide the growth for the future, but we also provide such a huge, through our companies, such a huge sort of a social impact by just virtue of just making sure people don't die and live longer and in better health. So that has a massive impact. I'm sure that they can see that. In fact, that's all of these transactions I talked about is about that. It's about how can you bring this to the larger audience and to the patients more globally. If you do that, I think I think it's gonna be a better world. So I think the fact that they are paying attention, I think is a good sign.
Absolutely. Now, to be mindful of time, and of course of my audience, I did our first episode with you. People, they absolutely loved it. I always get compliments on it. So yesterday, last night, I didn't even do it in the afternoon. So late last night, I did a post on LinkedIn saying, "Hey, Antoine's coming back to the show. What questions do you have?" I'm happy I did it. There's a part of me I wish I did it because I got a lot of questions. We're not going to get through all of them, but there's some really interesting ones. So I want to get through. Is that okay if we do a little rapid fire and get through these questions?
Sure.
So let's get through them. So I'm going to start with the first one I'm going to start with is actually from a CEO and entrepreneur, and I think it's a very interesting one. So this is from Chris Prentice. Chris Prentice was the CEO of Mazor Robotics. He was actually my first boss, and he's the CEO of a company called Harmonic Bionics now, which is digitizing shoulder health, right? Essentially through automating the rehabilitation of the shoulder, right? So a very interesting company, robotic company in data. I want to be clear because it's in here. So the question is, he says, Omar, I would be interested in Antoine's thoughts on addressing the continuum of care and conditions. MedTech has historically been very tactically focused, either tech focused on diagnosing a condition or tech focused on intervention. Dr. Bernd Montag of Siemens Healthineers mentioned in his keynote at the past LSI Europe conference their interest in technologies that can both diagnose and help intervene, crossing the chasms in the continuum of care. Does Sofinnova and Venture overall see an opportunity in innovation that can be present in multiple phases of continuum, specifically prevention, detection, diagnosis, treatment, and follow-up? Or does Antoine feel that that it's more of the role of healthcare strategics to focus on things like that?
So, look, it's a big question. I'm not sure we're going to be able to even tackle this one, but for sure, I mean, he's completely right. By the way, Mazor, I mean, I remember meeting with Ori Adomi probably about 20 years ago. So talking about resilience, you know, this company... and already still at Medtronic today, if I'm not mistaken, post the Mazor acquisition. So, you know, resilience is a very important trait in life. And certainly, Ori, I'm not sure if I've, we've met with the person asking the question, but I remember a lot of people from Mazor, and that's a pretty amazing story. He's completely right. The closed loop, if you want the simple closed loop, if you think about diabetes management, for sure, that's the simplest, you know, being able to diagnose blood glucose and then treat with insulin. Just take this as a model. It is what you need to have. And when you look at just this indication, you realize that people who are type 1 diabetic actually don't titrate as they should. So something that diagnoses what is it that you should inject in your body in order to manage your blood glucose. So it's I know it's an obvious example, but that's the first example that people think about when they think about sort of a closed loop. So that is going to come across the board. The do I think that it's only the big healthcare corporate that can do that? No, of course not. But you need to think about this from day one, even at a small startup. The issue is, do you have the wherewithal to be able to do that? You need time and you need money. So if you have this as a vision, then you need to make sure that that happens. And I think those companies that are going to have that, I detect, I treat in a closed loop. By definition, they particularly anything that is chronic, that's the only way to treat. You know, you are able, and you think about even if those devices are separate, but if the treatment is not, you know, a watch to measure hypertension, and you know, the treatment algorithm that tells you you need to go and to see your doctor to get a renal denervation through a recall catheter. I mean, it doesn't have to be one into the other, but this needs to be the data analysis part needs to be embedded into the device. By the way, just for information, I was, because you're talking about this particular company, this morning I went to visit one of our portfolio companies that you've had on this show, I believe, that's Moon Surgical.
You know, great company.
Third time. Yeah, amazing company. That's the third time that I visit. And I was discussing with Anos Dua, who, as you know, is also a partner at our firm. And my first visit was in the first very rough, pre-Moon, in fact, rough robot that was in at the university. And then I saw another one in the U.S. Maybe a year ago. And then I went to see what is virtually a commercial device. And what's struck me is not so much the fact that this is an amazing robot and that should be in every OR that does any abdominal surgery. I mean, if you do that, you'll do very, very well. Moon will do exceptionally well if that happens. But what's absolutely striking is that this robot is an incredible tool to add the data set. You are able to learn something that no one knows. And no one who uses an intuitive would know that, how a surgeon actually operates. Mm-hmm. You know, the movements that he or she does, how he grasps this instrument, how he cuts, the amount of force that he puts this. If you think about how to train, and just think about how complicated surgery is and how important the training of the next generation is, you could accelerate incredibly the formation of your surgeon. One, you could also differentiate pretty well between a, you know, 5-star surgeon and a 1 not so starry surgeon, and help that surgeon
absolutely
get to, you know, 3-star. So that is the data that you embed into. You could see it as a side business, but in fact, holistically, it is.
I think it is the business. Yeah, no, I completely agree. There's a couple, I'm looking at the time, so there's a couple other questions I want to make sure we get to. But no, but to your point, I totally agree. And I would say like with Harmonic Bionics, for me, I think people know this already about me, but I don't just like to consult or help any company. I like to work with really cool technologies. And even though Chris Prentice is a friend of mine and a mentor, you know, the first question I asked him, I was like, okay, well, it's a robotic company. Why does the world need another robot? Then they showed the data side to me. And I think this is the next step for robotic companies, which is what Harmonic's doing, what Moon is doing, which is, can you automate a process? And in the automation of that, all the data that you're capturing, how do you use that to enhance and take the procedure or the diagnosis or rehabilitation, whatever it is, to a new standard? And I think that the only way you can do that is with data. This,
I think absolutely.
You know what I mean?
Next generation is that. I mean, I think Ganymede is the same. It's not a French company. I'm not sure if you've
yeah, I've heard of them. I've heard of them.
Same. You should have them on the show. I think that's the same. We're not investors, but it's the same idea. It's like you need to have the data will transform surgery and therefore transform the care for patients at the end of the day.
100%. Okay. I'm just looking at the time. I want to be mindful because I know I told Bobby, I was like, I'm going to be good on the time. All right. So let's get through. So next question we have.
Hey everyone, I want to take a quick commercial break to tell you about the most important medtech event of the year. If you're not there, I don't know where else you would be. And that is the LSI USA Emerging MedTech Summit, which is happening on March 20th to 23rd at the luxurious world-class Waldorf Astoria Monarch Beach Resort in Dana Point, California. So why is this such a great event, and why is this the marquee event of our industry? Well, let's start with the first thing. First of all, there are 250 plus vetted presenting emerging medtech companies. So over 250 plus startup companies which have to had to apply, get vetted, and be picked, hand selected for this present for their presentations at this event. In attendance, you have over 1,000 global medtech innovators, investors, and strategics. So if you're an investor or venture capitalist, you can get your entire year of due diligence done just by attending this event. The biggest thing that I always think about when I describe this event to people is that this is not a trade show. It's a partnering event. And really, when I say it's a partnering event, it means that the whole thing was pretty much designed from the ground up just to facilitate real relationships, real connections that are actually going to help medtech leaders accelerate their growth. From the keynotes and firesides to the panels and the networking events, everything is designed to facilitate a sense of community where whether you're an investor or a medtech entrepreneur, you actually walk away with from the event with some valuable insights and connections that'll help you move to the next level. The other part is that all their sessions, they're run with this kind of unpanel philosophy, where essentially LSI's whole philosophy is, how do you challenge the traditional panel and encourage bold, authentic, and engaging conversations? Essentially, every time I go to a panel at LSI or Fireside, I'm always expecting this dialogue between speakers where controversy is welcome. Unpopular opinions are always encouraged. And LSI goes out of its way to get the best speakers and experts to address tough, I would even say taboo topics. And there's always a balance between, of course, the success stories that you want to hear. But in my opinion, where you learn the most are from the war stories, the mistakes and lessons learned. And LSI does such a fantastic job of capturing that. So if you want to learn more, if you want to sign up, which I highly recommend that you do, anybody who's anybody will be at this event, go to ls-intel.com. That's LS as in life science, -intel.com, or just check the show notes below. Now let's get back to the show.
We have an interesting one. So from Mike Moore, Mike Moore is a executive search consultant in the medtech industry. He has a great show called The Bleeding Edge, a digital health show. So he's very big in digital health. His question is, he would love to know how Sophie Nova is evaluating digital health opportunities differently in 2023, as opposed to the land grab that happened in 2020 and 2021, when VCs seemed to be placing bets pretty much all over the place, like a roulette game. Is Sophie Nova using specific criteria, and are you more specific in certain areas of digital health? So
the land grab is also linked to the fact that when you don't know what to do, then you have a shotgun approach and you invest in a lot of things and in everything. And that's not a very good way to invest, according to me. A lot of people, of course, went from the tech world into the digital health world thinking that's easy because they like the digital part of that and didn't really 100% comprehend. I'm, of course, it's a sweeping statement. I know there are some amazing people that came from the tech world to take this. But overall, that's the explanation of the land grab. Not everyone struck gold, you know, in that effort. And we, over the number of years, it's not even the last 3 years, we were thinking, okay, you know, we think that's a different industry. We think, yes, it's healthcare. If you don't understand healthcare, if you don't understand the clinical part, the regulatory part, the reimbursement part, you know, the patient, you're not going to do well at the end of the day. So you can do land grab and do, have a quick win, but that's not the way to play it. So we decided actually to take it slow, and also to bring people who actually know what they're talking about, is that this is really a specific field. If you're not an expert, you're going to make some mistakes. So even if you're an expert, you're going to make some mistakes. So let's make sure you reduce your number of mistakes, sort of innovate in the mistakes. That's another sort of a mantra that I've acquired.
Yeah, you mentioned that in the last show. I do like that. Innovate in mistakes. I do like that a lot.
Well, that's, I may have mentioned the quote because I need to quote it. It's a mantra from Gérard Asquet, who's a mentor of mine, and I think that tells you a lot. It's not, if you think you're not going to make any mistake, well, just don't be in that business.
Yeah.
But just try and not do twice or three times the same.
So this is kind of a combination of questions. So this is Santosh Iyer, who's over at Active Surgical, a very good friend of mine, you know, very big in the robotics world. And then my good friend, Henry Peck. So two guys actually for that I met through the robotics world. So they kind of had this a similar question, which was, what's Antoine's thoughts on companies in healthcare specialties where digital health has been profitable, and what can they teach us about the future innovations in medtech? And Henry kind of piggybacked on that and said, you know, how do you draw the line between specific areas of digital health and related practices in medtech? Like, you have clinical intelligence, diagnostics, digital therapeutics. Is there a difference, or do you feel like there's some kind of convergence? So what can we learn from the digital health space for medtech? And then do you feel that digital health and medtech is converging? Like, I don't know about you, but I'm still having difficulty just understanding what's considered medtech, what's considered digital health, because I feel like it's all starting to move together.
From our standpoint, digital health is too broad from who we are.
Yeah, I agree.
The way we approach it is digital medicine. So, but there, you know, yes, the digital medicine means the patient or the doctor is embedded, you know, so that's part of it. And there are different segments. Of course, digital therapeutics is something, it means that's a digital medication that will ultimately be approved by the FDA and the European authorities and be reimbursed, etc. So that's one part of it. But then, you know, the fact, we just said it, the fact that the data set that is being collected by a medical device, whether, you know, that is much closer to the device than to the digital health. And the second that you have a medical intervention, you need to place a device in a patient. I think that will remain in the place of medical device, even though the work is totally data centric. We have, and I don't want to, you know, we have one new company in our NV Start accelerator that is a pure, I would say, digital product, but it is in our medical device accelerator because, you know, right now that's where it needs to be. This is we're talking to doctors, we're talking to patients, and that's how this is being built.
So it is mainly because of the modality that it's a pure digital play, but it's MD Star, which is mainly medical devices, mainly because of the connection to doctors and patients. Is that the main reason?
I mean, it's not all the reasons, but that's pretty central. Here, you could not imagine it. This is not something you're going to push on the web. You have a small community of physicians that will need that digital product in order to make sure their medical practice is much more, much better. The treatment to the patient is much better. So that is much more medtech than digital health, for sure.
I see.
If that makes sense.
No, that makes complete sense.
Setting the scene here to, okay, a dedicated approach on, you know, digital medicine at Sofia Nova is something specific, and, you know, you might need a few more months, but we'll tell you about it.
Got it. Absolutely. Well, look, with the time winding down, so I can keep my word, I want to kind of, you know, allow you to have sort of the last word. Like, what are some, you know, final thoughts you have, like, at least for 2023, advice you have to entrepreneurs? And on that note, I'm going to allow you to go as long as you want. So that way, if we go over time, Bami's not going to get mad at me.
Okay. There was actually a short lapse.
There's a little bit of a lapse. Yeah. Any last words for 2023 for fellow investors in the medtech community?
So the realistic part of me says you need to be prepared for
the rain.
Landing in SFO on Sunday, which is when I'm leaving, and it's gonna be tough if we're not, you know, sort of deported to some other airport somewhere. So that's the reality of our business. You know, huge winds, lots of rain. You get wet. You know, soaked. It's not sort of a happy slappy. You still have to have a smile when you go and meet an investor. I'm talking for both the entrepreneurs and myself. So that's the landscape in which we are. Signs of JPM 2023. Maybe just to say that beside COVID, I've been going to JPM since 1996, I think, with one exception, which was when my son was born on the 1st of January 2000. So that's many years ago. So really, the only interruption has been the COVID week, and it's back to the future. This is going to be a crazy one under pouring rain. So that's, yeah, you know, you need to, no one's going to be happy about this. But A, I'm sure there's going to be great news. I talked about Abiomed pre-JPN. There's going to be news because all the corporates have in their corporate coffers the M&As that they have not revealed to the public. So there will be great news. Just look at that silver lining because there will be quite a lot. And you can commiserate, you can be unhappy and depressed, but I'm sorry, I look at the silver lining and then, you know, let's just focus on that. And if you have strong partners, strong friends, strong investors around you, then you should be able to cross that chasm and and then build what could be amazing companies. Again, back to what I was saying, this morning I went to visit Moon Surgical. I'm thinking, wow, if I ever have, you know, gallbladder surgery, I'd rather make sure that it's with the Moon robot because the guy is going to be a better surgeon. So I think if you keep this in mind, you know, you should be proud to be a medtech entrepreneur, proud to be a medtech person in a company, and do some really amazing, great work. So that's to finish on my optimistic side.
I love it, Antoine. And this is why I always love speaking to you, having you on the show. And I think your analogy with SF on the rain is great. You know, I think very much like JPM next week, I think maybe for the market this year is like, who's going to be the most motivated to take extra pairs of shoes and just weather the storm? So with that said, Antoine, it's such a pleasure to having you back on the show. Yeah, and then hopefully I'll be at JPM next week so we can meet up finally. So awesome.
Great, fantastic.
Well, thank you all for listening to the show.
Thank you.
Antoine, it's a pleasure, and we'll see you all next.
Thank you for enjoying another epic episode of The State of MedTech. If you're feeling inspired and love this episode, do us a favor, hit that subscribe button and turn notifications on so you never miss an episode. And be sure to give us 5 stars and write a short review because that helps more people discover this amazing community of ours. If you're a company who has a executive that you'd like to be on the show, or perhaps you want to sponsor one of the episodes, shoot us an email at hello@katibandco.com. Take care. See you next time.